If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key and that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Hi, I'm Paula Zahn, announcing the launch of On the Case, the podcast. Experience the most dramatic true crime investigations in a whole new way. Hear from loved ones on a relentless quest for justice and interviews with the detectives who piece together the mystery. On the Case with Paula Zahn, the podcast. Download it wherever you listen to podcasts.
Hello and welcome to the Just Interesting podcast, the podcast where nothing is fascinating, everything is just interesting. With me, Robin, our Alex. Hello, Alex.
Hi there, Robin. How's it going?
All right, thank you. How are you?
Yeah, pretty good. Pretty good. Keeping well, keeping sane, I think. I feel more sane this week than I did last week.
That is important. Yeah, that's very important. And how about you, Martin? Are you still sane?
just about. I mean, some of my erratic tweets probably suggested otherwise, but I'm okay. I mean, I don't know if anyone's watching this, I've smashed up my phone while holding up to the screen. Oh. It's battered, it's gaffer taped together, and we're in a pandemic, so I can't really do too much about it. But other than that, I'm keeping fairly well. I mean, it's same old at the moment, really, isn't
it? How did you break your phone, Martin? I'm curious, without going outside.
I dropped it, it's the classic. I dropped it, didn't have a case on. But I drop it all the time, and it hasn't broken until I dropped it on the bathroom floor, which is very solid. Oh. And I was thinking to myself, I was like, this phone is indestructible. Went and picked it up, cracked down the screen.
Oh, no.
That's how it happens.
Yeah. Spoke too soon. But yeah, other than that, we're good.
Before we get stuck into today's topics, we'll be talking about the divide between the boomer generation and our generation, the millennial generation. But before we get stuck into all that, we'll find out what we've learned this week. I want to say a big thank you and welcome to our new patrons on Patreon, who are Javier De Haro, Mitch Horrocks, Stefan Tinel, I hope I pronounced your name correctly, DH, George Allen, Jamie Dodd, Ben Hawkins, and Elsbeth Elliott. Great name. So thank you all and welcome to the club.
Thank you so much, yeah.
Yes.
You'll hopefully all be enjoying your very first brand new Patreon-exclusive podcast, which we'll be recording after this, in which we'll be discussing Japan's plans to draw up new UFO encounter protocols after seeing US footage, which was released recently.
Yeah, this last week now. That's I'm really excited to discuss that, actually. That was crazy, wasn't it? That just completely went under the radar. The US just basically confirmed UFOs actually exist.
I mean, it's good timing, isn't it, really?
Well, good timing for them.
So that'll be live now. So when people watch us in the future, that'll be live now. So you can click, we'll put it in the description as we always do. So yeah, if you've signed up, go check it out. And I think there's about, 15 other videos up there already? So plenty for you to get through if you're incredibly good.
and feel just free, want something interesting. Yeah.
And feel free to let us know your thoughts on them on our Discord as well, which is going really well. There's a nice little community of people there. So
It's fantastic. And if you don't want to join Discord and if you're not a patron, then you can always give us a review on Apple Podcasts just to let us know your thoughts, because genuinely, your thoughts and your views are valuable to us improving this podcast. We always want to make it better. So please do give us a rating and a review on Apple Podcasts and any other podcast platform that you can give us feedback on. Please do.
Is there anything else we need to plug? I feel like we've plugged a lot this week. So.
we went through the checklist.
I think we did, Just nice.
I don't think so.
I'm just going to enjoy my beer, nice and refreshing.
Very good. What are you drinking?
Adnam's Ghost Ship, which is citrus pale ale.
Very nice.
I think particularly in warm weather is perfect. But
it is. It's light and lightly hopped.
Yes.
With a malty backbone, I'd say. Oh, quite biscuity.
Got Martin talking about beer.
It's great, isn't it? And for the record,
should we just do
we're
that
not
instead?
Being paid for this, so we're just promoting beer for free.
Yes, and it's the choice of a new generation.
The choice of a new generation.
Moving on. Alex, tell me, what did you learn this week?
Oh, okay. I learned something interesting this week. Mm. Have you both heard of the Shingo Savior?
No. What's that?
No, what's that?
Well, let me tell you. On the flat top of a steep hill in a distant corner of northern Japan lies the tomb of a shepherd who, 2 millennia ago, settled down there to grow garlic. He fell in love with a farmer's daughter named Mayuko, fathered 3 children, and died at the ripe old age of 106.
No, wow.
In the mountain hamlet of Shingo, he's remembered by the name Daitenku Taro Jirai. However, the rest of the world knows him as Jesus Christ.
What?
Yeah, I know. So there's basically this little hamlet in Japan called Shingo, there's a group of people there who believe that Jesus Christ basically didn't actually get crucified, and they believe that he swapped out with his little brother, and then he moved to Japan and settled down and lived to a ripe old age.
I mean, there's one flaw in this story.
Go on.
It's the fact that he was a garlic farmer eating loads and loads of garlic, and he managed to father 3 children. I mean, that much garlic, no one's going to want to sleep with you.
That's the flaw in the story that you found.
That's
the flaw in the story. There's no, the rest of it is kind of plausible, right?
Yes, very. Absolutely.
Just that bit in particular.
Garlic is great. I love garlic. Oh.
Yeah, you don't stink of garlic.
I do stink of garlic.
Constantly. time. Sorry, Alex. I'm sure there's more for you to say about this story. This doesn't just involve.
There's a little bit more.
Okay, there's more. Yeah.
Okay.
Well, so they say that basically Jesus was a fan of Japan and moved there when he was a young adult for 12 years. There's the lost years where.
Where
we don't really know what Jesus was up to.
Mm. He suddenly reappeared at the age of 33 and started his ministry, and everyone's like, well, what were you doing?
Exactly. Yeah. So the theory goes that he moved to Japan to study theology when he was 21 years old. So he was having a gap decade in Japan.
Yeah. Well, it would have taken him that long just to get there and back again, wouldn't it? Very long way to go.
Yeah, 6,000 miles away.
Do you reckon he could do a power move and be like, I don't have to study theology. I am theology.
I mean, maybe that's it, yeah.
Swapping out with your brother is a bit of a dick move.
Yeah.
Go on. Things are going up shit creek, and you're like, do you mind just doing this one for me? Do me a solid.
Come on, I'm the son of God.
Yeah.
Well, it's interesting you should mention that, because there is a separate tradition that I grew up knowing about, which was that Jesus had a twin brother who was, and then there are these kind of theories spiraling off that his twin brother had been executed instead, or the whole resurrection thing is actually Jesus's twin pretending to be Jesus.
The issue though is that it kind of defeats the point of the sacrifice being
a little
made
bit,
though, right?
Just a little bit, yeah.
It's something that they haven't really thought about.
This kind of group still worship him, but it's he hasn't died for their sins or anything. He buggered off.
Yes,
he fled. Yeah.
Jesus' death on the cross and in particular the resurrection are kind of the essential core part of Christianity, like really, really essential to the theological belief in Christ as God. Kind of saying, it's like fan fiction really, isn't it? It is fan fiction, I suppose.
I guess.
It's also suggesting that there wasn't anything divine about it, right? It's like he didn't rise again. He just died in old age.
That's true. He just became a garlic farmer.
Yeah.
Very nice. That's what I learned this week.
Absolutely fascinating. You know what? I think we're going to disqualify you, Alex, because that was too interesting.
Oh.
Yeah. Just get out. Martin, what did
you say? There's no place for really interesting things in this podcast.
just go.
I was going to say, are we using, is just interesting? I thought it was like, we're just focusing on interesting stuff. It's like just interesting, as opposed to it being interesting.
You've misunderstood. You've misunderstood kind of, this whole time, Martin.
Oh no.
This was formed on false pretenses. Yeah.
Save
sure.
this for the board meeting, Martin. We can have this discussion with the shareholders in 10 years' time when they exist.
Yeah.
So yeah, what did you learn, Martin?
So I learned about the plague masks. You know, the traditional plague masks you see with a big kind of bird beak and the hat and the big, almost like a trench coat thing.
Making a comeback, as I hear.
Well, making a comeback. You've seen the bloke on the news hanging around at the back of a... Was that in... I think it was in Leicester Square. Someone just walked in the background wearing a plague mask. It's a bit of a publicity stunt. But I've learned where those came from and why they were the way they were, especially the beak thing. Something I didn't know before. And so most people think about the plague and especially think about the Black Death in the 14th century as being kind of like where those originated from. But they actually came about much later, in the 17th century, when, of course, the plague kept on kind of reappearing across Europe especially and causing issues, causing millions and millions of deaths. Bubonic plague, to be precise.
Sorry.
And...
Just having some issues.
I like to play. I like to play things down a little bit. Yeah. And so, being a plague doctor wasn't the best job to have because, of course, you're exposed to people with bubonic plague all of the time, and quite frankly, the survival rates weren't very good for either people suffering, of course, from bubonic plague, but also the doctors because they didn't know what it was. There wasn't the theory of how bacteria spread and how pathogens spread. So they just thought it was from bad air.
Yeah.
So I guess it kind of makes sense. Like, you think about it, like, the air around you is bad, therefore you have to protect yourself from it.
It's not a million miles away from...
Yeah. It's not. It's just not understanding why, really, isn't it?
It's weird thinking that they were kind of along the right lines, but they just didn't understand the science of it. So but they kind of got...
The earliest PPE.
Yeah, they kind of got it, but... Yeah.
Yeah, it's true. And so they'd wear all this, as you'd expect, all this cover-up to make sure that they weren't going to be exposed to it as much as possible, because they did lots of like autopsies and stuff, and basically most of the time dealt with dead bodies as opposed to alive ones. And so in this big beak, they actually, in the end of it, they had like incense and like nice smelling stuff. One, because if you're around dead bodies the whole time, it's going to be like really, really horrible. And two, they thought that by putting... this stuff in there, it acts as like a barrier to the bad air. And so often there's accounts in France where they would actually light the end of the mask, and so there'd be like smoke and perfume and incense going through the mask itself, which sounds really, really dangerous.
That can't be good. That can't be good for you if you're inhaling that.
No, it can't be good at all. So actually, it was originally it was kind of protection, but also especially the mask itself was kind of like a nice smelling incense thing, which is actually quite far away from the kind of terrifying symbolism that we associate it with. It was meant to be kind of like a nice thing to be able to wear in a time where everyone was dying from bubonic plague.
Yeah, because it's a very creepy looking thing with the long beak, and it's always presented as black. I don't know if it was black, but it always looks, you know, in paintings and drawings and things, it's always looking like a big black mask, very sinister. But yeah, so inside it smells like roses and things like that.
Yeah.
Imagine if you've got like if you had like a bad fever and you were getting kind of seeing weird things and having hallucinations and stuff, and then you see this person with a smoking beak treating you. It'd be terrifying.
Yeah. Yeah, it's the last thing you want, right? It's like when people have clowns in hospitals. Like, people are sick. You don't want a clown there. Madness. Yeah,
you can't even run away.
Yeah. You can't even run away. It's true. So that's the history of a brief history of where the plague doctors came from. It wasn't the Black Death. It was much later, and it was meant to be kind of like a protection, but also a nice thing where you could smell the roses in a time of shit.
Oh, thanks, Martin. That was great. Interesting.
It's good to know. I've got a similar kind of historical story. We've all gone for historical stories today. This is interesting. But this week I learned that during World War II, there was a famine in Holland during the winter of 1944-45. So Dutch people, because of the food shortage, used to use tulip bulbs instead of onions when they were cooking.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Are they from the, same family?
I think they might be, because when you look at a tulip bulb, it looks a lot like an onion. It's like a small onion.
It does, doesn't it? A little bit. That's
apparently, you have to be careful, though, because the bulbs that they use, often, if you took a tulip today and cooked the bulb, it might have a quite sweet or milky flavour to it. But the bulbs that they were using, because it was the winter time and they hadn't planned to use them, so they weren't really fresh. They were dry and bitter, which wasn't very pleasant. But also, there was a case study of people who ate a cooked dish using household tulip bulbs. And they developed difficulty breathing, sweating, and vomiting.
Oh, so don't do it.
Right.
And if you eat too many, you can potentially, in rare cases, die. So even though you can, you shouldn't.
If anyone's battery of their listening device cut out, please turn it back on.
So
make sure you hear this advice afterwards of not to do it, rather than just it can be substituted.
So, say if you're in the wilderness, Robin, you're in a Bear Grylls survival situation, or Raymere's, and you don't have any food, but you find a field of tulips.
Yeah.
Should you, what in that situation, is it worth it, do you think, to give it a go? Try and eat some onions?
Apparently, the petals of the tulip are fine to eat. They don't contain any toxins, but the rest of the plant, the stem, the leaves, and the bulb, all contain toxins. I think you could probably get away with eating one. But if you eat, I actually read this, there's a statistic, which is if you, as long as you eat fewer than 5 bulbs in a day, you won't die.
You're literally there to chop.
That's it. My response was like, 5 is quite a lot. I wouldn't have 5 onions in a day. Like, what are you doing? But it's quite a lot. But they are quite small, I guess. So an onion's quite large, whereas tulip bulbs are quite small. So you might be tempted to eat more than 5.
So you eat 4. So you're saying you eat 4.5, you're fine. You eat 5, you're going to die.
I'm not committing to anything, Alex. So I'm not going to be trapped that way. But everyone listening at home, please don't do it.
Yeah. Yeah, don't
but,
do it.
That's what I learned this week.
Disinfectant's fine, but, you know, tulip bulbs, don't do it.
Yeah, I mean, the president can say what he likes, but yeah. Robin is not immune from prosecution. So he is he's warning everyone.
Yeah, disinfectant is not fine, by the way. Don't ingest that either. Yeah.
Do you reckon there's some way we could get that tulip bulbs into his daily press briefing?
Just send him an email.
Send an email and be like, there's some new evidence. Tulip bulbs, who look across to the team of doctors and be like, tulip bulbs? And they're there just like, maybe not. But they won't say anything because they're scared.
They just kind of stare at him blankly and like, oh my goodness, what did you say?
They stare off into the distance pretending not to hear.
In terms of weird news, moving on to that.
Yeah.
I stayed with Europe this week and it's coronavirus related, sadly, but it's kind of interesting in that in the Swedish city of Lund, don't know if anyone's ever been there. I haven't, but it sounds lovely. Anyway, so the Swedish city of Lund has an annual gathering in its Stadspark. Normally, up to 30,000 people come, mostly students from all over the country to celebrate their spring festival. Generally, it's a big booze up. Everyone gets drunk. Has a great time.
Oh, that sounds great.
Sweden has surprisingly more relaxed guidelines regarding COVID-19 than most other European countries. I guess because they haven't been that heavily affected by it, so they're quite lenient. Sweden's also relatively spacious. It doesn't have a huge population density, so they're slightly more relaxed about things. But they're worried that because of the relaxed measures they're taking against COVID-19, people will still come to the city to gather. So to put people off, they are spreading chicken manure all over the Stadspark.
That stuff stinks.
That'll do it. Yeah.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. They used to spread that across some fields across from where my parents lived. It was awful. Awful stuff. Mm.
There you go. First-hand experience. Proving that the Swedish authorities are correct. A spokesperson said, although it will drive people away, on the other hand, it is good for the lawn.
I mean, what a good time to treat the lawn, in fairness, when you know, when people won't be using it and you want to keep people away. two birds with one stone.
So the place where this is, it's like, I take it, it's a town, right? People are living close by.
Yes. So they're going to suffer this, yeah.
So, yeah. Exactly. Like, that's the issue, right? They're going to screw over that town so badly.
It's going to be in generations to come when people reminisce, like, Granddad, what happened during the COVID-19 crisis? And he's just like, the worst thing was the chicken manure.
He just suddenly gets the smell and it brings him back to that moment. Just
it's suddenly turned sepia. It's like it wasn't even black and white.
That's where plague masks came into it, just burning incense to get rid of the smell of chicken manure.
Oh yeah. Man, good point.
Man, everything ties together. We're clever this week. It's all part of a theme.
Yes.
Is it?
Yes.
I don't know. What weird news have you two brought?
Well, I'm not sure how this is going to tie into everything. You've kind of set me up to fail there now. Oh. But my news is actually more of a theory, but it's a theory put forward by an Oxford University professor called Dr. Yong Hei Chi, who's an academic at Oxford's Oriental Institute, who has made a pretty extraordinary claim. He says that aliens, extraterrestrials, are breeding with human beings to produce a super species which could one day save the planet from climate change. Which is a pretty extraordinary theory.
I mean, I'm not quite sure
how to respond.
There's a few questions.
It's the classic alien-human hybrids theory, but it's being put forward by an Oxford University professor, which...
I mean, that's the thing, isn't it? And then the fact that saving the world from climate change... I'm trying to think where that comes into it too. Was there any further information given on how exactly that would happen? If we're skipping ahead a little bit.
I don't know if he actually goes into too much detail on it, but I think it's more like humans will become more enlightened and take the issue of climate change more seriously when they've got some alien DNA in them, you know?
Yeah, or maybe it's like if aliens managed to get to Earth, they would have the advanced enough technology to be able to solve these problems that we have on our planet.
It's a hopeful message.
Yeah. But he said in a lecture given to a conference in 2012, it is not only scientists and theologians, but also non-human species who appear to be greatly concerned about the survivability of the human species. So,
he was referring to cats.
Cats would be very interested, actually, because if we go... then what do they do?
Exactly.
Actually, I read something somewhere that said if humans just disappeared out of one day just we all vanished, cats would actually be like the top of the food chain or something. They do remarkably well. Dogs, however, like all the domesticated dogs wouldn't do as well. You know, like a French bulldog. What are they going to do? They're not going to do anything.
Labrador are not going to survive.
Cats are maybe more resourceful, aren't they? They're more independent and resourceful. Plus, if you're talking about all cats, you're talking about lions and tigers as well. I mean, they're not doing so well, but that's partly human.
Yeah, get rid of the humans.
Problems
and
with humans.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
So anyway, just remind me, what was he professor of again?
He was an academic at Oxford's Oriental Institute.
So nothing to do
with... I'm trying to establish whether he has any scientific basis for these claims, or if he's just like, I'm professor of English.
I think it's more like a... I don't think he has any scientific background. I think it's more like a theory, like a philosophical theory he's put together, I guess.
I mean, I like it.
He says, aliens are just next to us, but we can't see them. If they are far, they shouldn't be concerned about us. I don't think they are far away. They are just next to us.
So he's basically giving his personal opinions, but because he's a professor, it gets airtime, basically.
I think that's basically it, yeah. he did try and get this into an Oxford debate club or something to actually try and debate this, but they said no.
No,
that's okay. Very disappointing, actually, because that feels like it's a worthwhile debate.
I wonder if this has. I mean, I'm not going to be out there and discredit his theory without knowing much about it. But I wonder if this has any impact on his position as a respected professor at the university.
Yeah.
His own personal
That's
views.
What I kind of find interesting, because you often get this where, like, academics come out. Academics generally, you know, if they need to write papers and that kind of thing, and it will be peer reviewed, and then they get kind of judged by a lot of what they say. Mm. And so to just say something like this with very little evidence, I don't know, it seems kind of bold, quite bold of him to do so.
Courageous.
He's risking his kind of academic career, right?
Yeah, I think it's...
Yeah, yeah.
There's two things to bear in mind with this kind of example, which is, on the one hand, they might not be an expert in the relevant field, but academics and professors in particular are intellectually capable enough to have a valuable opinion on things outside their natural field. So that's cool. That's worth bearing in mind. That's why we hold professors in such high esteem, generally speaking, because they are intelligent people who have a way of approaching problems and approaching questions, which means they don't necessarily, we hope, make uninformed opinions.
Yeah.
On the other hand, in terms of their professional status, one would hope that one could have crazy, uninformed views about something that you're not a specialist in. But as long as you can do your job well, you get to keep your job. For example, you know, a mechanic, a car mechanic might think UFOs are visiting Earth and they're interbreeding with humans to save the world from climate change. I wouldn't fire him as a mechanic.
That's true. No. I mean, this doesn't disqualify him from his job in Oriental Studies. I mean, why would it? It can be perfectly...
It's very true. It's just the kind of the expectation as a professor. I'm not saying that he hasn't thought about it properly or that his theory is completely false. I'm saying that a lot of people would see that as a headline and think, is this person thinking critically? Yeah. And we want critical thinkers in our department, if it's highly esteemed at Oxford University.
Good point.
That's 100% correct,
There is one part of the story that makes me doubt his claims and fairness.
Oh, yeah.
Well, he says that the majority of reactions to his claims, when people hear what he believes, he says are like, yes, you're right, I've experienced abduction by aliens, I can tell you more detail if you wish, and what you said might be true. I don't think the majority of people are saying that to him.
No, that sounds mad.
The majority of people will be like, what are you smoking?
Although at the same time, he may appeal to a particular niche, who are the ones who get back in touch with him because they already believe that his theory is true, right?
True.
So they might be supporting it, that kind of...
Or maybe it's a case of, this mad person is just speaking to me about aliens, so you're like, yeah, sure, maybe. And then you just slowly back away from him. Maybe that kind of thing.
I think there's a difference as well, to be fair, between saying, okay, I believe based on this evidence that aliens are among us, and then going to the stretch of, and they're interbreeding with humans, which suggests that there's some kind of biological compatibility with humans, and then they're here to solve climate change. It's like, there's a few steps too many for it to be for it to seem plausible.
Yeah, exactly. Aliens,
that's the issue.
It's true, though. You've made a couple of more remarkable claims there, on top of just that aliens are regularly visiting Earth, that they are biologically compatible and, are trying to solve climate change. That's a good point. I feel like with this kind of thing, extraordinary claims require extraordinary evidence, and he hasn't provided any. So,
no, but he's also tried to ascribe a motive, and this is a great example of how conspiracy theories are received by people. People who believe it tend to look at the first step, which is there basic evidence for the premise of your conspiracy theory? In this case, UFOs, aliens visiting Earth. Then it's like, okay, I subscribe to your conspiracy theory. Other people who laugh and scoff say, they look at the motive that people claim and they're like, well, there's no evidence for that. You're lying. And what you need is to kind of examine every part, as you guys have both said. Look at every single part. Is there enough evidence to back up every part of your theory? And the motive is always the bit where they fall down, because there's always the bit that people have to be creative about. So, Martin, what weird news have you got?
Well, my my news isn't exactly weird, and it's more of a kind of a discussion topic that I'd like to have with you guys, as opposed to out.
Well, that's not what the section is about, Martin.
Yeah, Martin.
I know, but I mean, shock horror. Working from home has had a positive effect on people's productivity. No, that's the news story. Yeah, crazy, right? And I just wanted to get your guys' take on what we've all done bits from working from home. What you guys think, and I'll give you a few stats and see if you kind of agree with what's been said. Sorry, it's very different from aliens.
No, good.
There we go. So in this study, 54% of this particular survey, it doesn't say how many people, but from ages 18 to 74, 54% thought that it had a positive effect, the pandemic had a positive effect on workers' productivity by working from home. They said that they saved time on commuting, 71% of people. 61% of people said that there were fewer distractions from co-workers, and 39% said that one of the reasons was that there were fewer meetings, or presumably fewer pointless meetings, which I'm sure, well, I know we've all been in the past.
Yeah.
So according to the survey, they also said that one of the issues with it was the fact that there were issues with mental health, with people being isolated, and particularly of loneliness as time goes on. So it's like, it seems to me like working from home in a lot of ways can be a productive thing. It can be good for your mental health and the fact that you're spending more time with friends and family and maybe to do things you want to do as opposed to commute and have lots less stresses there and strains. But at the same time, over the long run, it can have issues with your mental health and that side of things. And speaking to some of my friends in the past who have done kind of contracted work and freelance stuff, that has been one of the things that comes up. It's like, it's good, but if you don't go out of your way to see people, you just won't see people because there isn't that work and structured environment and your working patterns change and that kind of thing, which can also affect your mental health. So in this survey, 25% of people said that it had actually had a negative impact on their productivity, and 43% said that they were communicating less with their colleagues than they did before. So I just want to get your thoughts on working from home when you have done in the past, and what you think about this and how it will change kind of the workforce in our country and also in other countries going forward. Will we have a workforce that now works from home because they can see that it's productive, or will we kind of revert back to type?
Oh, this is really interesting.
Get out.
Yeah. it's interesting. I feel like when this is all over, this is all behind us, everything, it'll be interesting to see how many companies maintain some semblance of the whole working from home thing. Because if this whole coronavirus working from home is seen as some massive working from home experiment, and it kind of proves that people are more productive, or at least as productive, then surely that will make a lot of businesses question, okay, do we need this amount of office space? Can we have some people hot desking and people working from home half the time, that kind of thing? I feel like my initial reaction is that, yeah, a healthy balance of both would be the ideal solution, maybe. Going into the office 1 or 2 days a week and then working from home the rest sounds nice to me.
Family and friends that I've spoken to, I echo your thoughts, Alex. They have the similar thing, which is a weird combination of simultaneously feeling more productive when they are working from home, but at the same time, craving the structure that getting out of the house and going to a workplace does provide.
Yeah.
And they like that mental break between work and home life, and the fact that when they're in the office, they can see colleagues and they have that communication with people, but it's in a really controlled way. Like, you know, when you're with your friends, you can spend endless hours, hopefully if they're good friends, endless hours hanging around with them. When you're work colleagues, you have social interaction, but without the pressure to be with them 100% of the time, you know. So there's that positive reinforcement from having interactions with other people, but without the burden of social obligations. You can just say hello and talk to people about certain issues. But at the same time, you have the advantage of the psychological break and say, right, I'm at work now. And when you're at home, you can say, oh, I'm at home now. And that's the anecdotal evidence that I've picked up from my friends and family at the moment. Personally,
no, that's a great point, yeah.
Yeah, personally, I'm an introvert. Yeah. I love being alone. So working from home isn't a problem to me. What I find most difficult about the current situation we're in is that the freedom to go out has been removed. So I'm generally fine working from home, provided at the back of my mind, I know that I can go out, see people, get some fresh air, either visit friends or just casually pop into a shop and, you know, do something, like buying a treat or whatever. If I feel that I can go out and see people, I'm generally fine with being on my own because I feel like it's a choice that I'm making. The current situation, and this is what would be interesting to see how life changes after the lockdown has ended, if it ends, it will be how people adapt to that, because a lot of people who've never worked from home before at the moment might be struggling with being alone, when actually what they're struggling with potentially is the lack of freedom to choose to not be alone.
That's a good point.
Yeah.
I think there'll definitely be a subsect of people who haven't really worked from home before and struggle to kind of adapt to kind of remote working, a remote working environment, and making sure that, like, everyone's different, right? Like, some people find it much easier. So on an individual basis, some people will struggle with being alone with it. Some people will struggle with distractions.
Yes.
It just depends. I think it depends on who you are and also the type of work you're doing as well.
Massively,
Like, it massively changes. With a lot of the stuff that we do, you can do it at home, you can do it remotely, but you also want that kind of creative collaboration between a team, especially working on a team, between you, that comes from speaking to someone in person, probably more than on a phone call or video call. But it can be done remotely, whereas other things just can't be. So it'd be interesting to see and how it changes. But I can see a shift towards remote working, especially when you have employees who realise that, especially living in the UK, where transport's like the most expensive thing ever, like trumps everything else, doesn't it?
That's what I was going to bring.
And so you're saving loads of costs, which means that then workers can, if they want to, they can save costs on, as you were saying, Alex, on office space and on all different overheads. But also, if people are happy working from home and are saving costs there, potentially they don't have to pay quite as much to have that same kind of satisfaction of their workforce, because you, in real terms, you're actually earning the same amount as you would be if you're having to travel.
I was about to say, I bet that will be one of the first things to change. If there's a general adoption of working from home as a standard practice, employers will cut salaries to be like, well, you don't need that extra money for your commute costs. So, you know. But that will happen before anything else happens. Well, before we move on to our topic of the week, our discussion, which is, are the generations more divided than ever? I want to talk about people's responses to last week's topic, which was about, is America going into a second world war? Sorry, a second civil war. That's a big mistake to make.
Yes.
I think I also made that mistake in the podcast itself.
Second and war, there's a word that goes in the middle, and it's going to be...
Exactly.
So we got quite a lot of responses to this, actually. A lot of really interesting comments. It's a shame we don't have the time to respond to all of them right now. But there's a couple of really interesting ones. Really interesting. Maybe I shouldn't read them out.
Too interesting.
My favorite was from Rocket Summer, who said that, wow, Martin's hair looks really great and I'm super jealous. So let's start with
that. As I replied, I think it's the dodgy camera. I just did it myself, razor to the sides.
No, I'm just...
Shaved it a few weeks ago, all over. And then it's grown a little bit on the top, so I managed to just do the sides and back, which luckily you can't see. So thank you very much, but you're wrong.
That was a genuine comment, Martin. Just batted them away.
It's very kind.
Lee Scheffler said, I don't think this is an insane topic or concept in the slightest. I live in a very rural area of America, I assume, and have regularly heard Trumpkin types... that's a good word, Trumpkin... I have regularly heard Trumpkin types around me joke about stockpiling weapons for war against the left for years. I'd like to believe they're unhinged, that it's not possible, but it frankly wouldn't surprise me all that much.
Wow.
Yeah.
Interesting. Wow.
That's pretty scary. Okay. I hope you feel safe, Lee.
It is. I mean, hopefully it's not what you think it is, and it's more kind of tongue-in-cheek and a bit of kind of political banter as opposed to anything else. But I guess you can only go by your own experiences, can't you?
Cassie Stevenson said something interesting, again, from the American perspective. Just no, they're not heading into a second civil war. Americans are fighting for radical continuity. We live under a one-party state. Rich people on the right and on the left are looting the treasury. There is no opposing party.
Well, sure.
Yeah, there was a bit of a discussion.
Yeah, I saw. That. Yeah, quite a meaty one. Yeah.
But I understand the point. I think it's a very good point. It's from what I understood of it. It was definitely more about a conflict between the classes, the haves and have nots, and it was less about left and right, and more about political elites versus those who don't have the ability to stand up to them.
Interesting.
Well, yeah.
It's
a fascinating topic, and please continue to share your thoughts. But speaking of divisions, let's move on to this week's topic, which is, are the generations more divided than ever? What's your thoughts, guys?
I mean, we see it, don't we? It feels like things are becoming more divided, but I don't know if that's genuinely, if that's a genuine kind of generations are more divided, or if it's just a kind of universal thing that's happened through history. And to back that up, we can look at the earliest known account of generational divide. And we can go to Aristotle in the 4th century BC, who says, young people are high-minded because they have not yet been humbled by life, nor have they experienced the force of circumstances, which is, you know, just a 2,500-year-old way of saying respect your elders.
Yeah.
Okay, boomer, Aristotle.
Yeah, exactly.
That's it, though. That's so succinct. That's exactly what people say now.
Yeah,
that's it. I mean, the question is this divide greater than ever? And I mean, I think it depends where you are in terms of what points you would argue for or against. In the UK here, we've seen that even just statistically, the older generations, the baby boomer generation, has in general benefited a lot more from government policy. Their pensions have increased, their retirement ages is lower than what it will be in the future. And they've been able to, of course, buy property, a fair amount of times a second property without much stamp duty, etc. There's various things in terms of the real term cash payments they've been given. But does that actually divide us, or is that just things we're just a little bit hung up about?
Well, anything that creates some kind of tension between different groups of society is a division, isn't it?
Sure.
And money is possibly the defining feature of modern life. you know, it's the thing that we all need to get by. It's the thing that allows us to live comfortably or uncomfortably. And we know that, I haven't got the exact statistics, but, you know, number of people who rent disproportionately is younger people. And it's constantly growing, at least in the UK. And in the UK, we have this cultural expectation and this cultural desire to own our own home. It's different in other countries, like Germany in particular, has developed this, I think one would say, healthy attitude towards renting. People are expected to rent. People intend to rent. People don't mind renting their entire lives. The difference is that we have a rental economy that isn't what we would define as reasonably priced.
And also, I guess you've also got the older generation that has the benefit of maybe having some savings, and they can now put those savings on a deposit for a second house and then rent that out to a younger person to pay off the mortgage on it. which is only kind of increasing that wealth divide between the generations.
Exactly, because as of 2018, a study into looking at the different generations' proportion of their income that they spent on housing, it's just under 25% for millennials, people who were born from 1981 onwards, compared to the pre-Second World War and baby boomer generations who never spent more than 19% of their income on housing. And for them, for baby boomers, yeah. it's gone down as they've got older. It's now an average of 14% that they spend on their homes. Which, given that you've got the millennial and Generation X who are spending about 24% at the same time, that's a big motivation to feel divided, I think.
Yeah.
Yes. Yeah, no, it certainly does seem to be the
case. Making me depressed.
Yeah. There's a, well, I'll make you feel even better. So there's a study from 2014. So I don't know if the conclusions would be different today. But 6 years ago, a study investigated perceptions of emerging adults, who are people aged 18 to 25, compared to perceptions of adults, the older generation. And the survey included people from aged 18 to 87. And the general trend was that people had positive feelings towards adults, but negative feelings towards emerging adults, and characterized emerging adults as more immoral, narcissistic, and overconfident, which is exactly what Aristotle was saying.
But then, yeah, that's a good counter argument to this question: are they becoming more divided? When you can see that they're saying the exact same thing that Aristotle was saying 2,500 years ago. Is it the case that this is just universal, and when we're their age, we're going to be saying the same thing about young people? I mean, it's from our point of view as young people, I feel like we obviously have our own biases on this topic. It definitely does feel like we are, you know, the victims of a lot of this. But are we just being snowflakes? That's my question. Are we just not pulling up our bootstraps enough and getting on with it? At the end of the day, we've got all the luxuries that modern life offers us that, you know, the older generation didn't have. We have PlayStations and games and an abundance of cheap food and alcohol. What are we complaining about?
We also spend our money on different things, right? I'd say that although we have less disposable income, we decide to spend it on a lot of other things like travel and entertainment and stuff like that, which if you really wanted to, if you wanted to save up that money, you could do. It would lead to a lower quality of your life, arguably. I just think that there isn't that motivation, because if you look at the average house price in the UK, what is it? £250,000-£300,000 for a lot of people who are on a standard wage, they prefer to enjoy their life rather than save up for, say, 20 years or 15-20 years for to be able to afford that place, whereas the previous generation maybe only had to for 5 years. So maybe they are less willing, millennials, to make those kind of short-term sacrifices, because for them it's actually going to be longer term until it's affordable.
Yeah.
And then kind of your best years where you can do those fun things in terms of traveling and entertainment, having fun with your friends, will be more likely over.
I do.
Because it's taking you much longer.
I really hate it when they say that, when it's like, oh, you know, if you just don't buy anything, you know, if you just don't do things that make life worth living for like 10 years, you'll be able to buy a one bed flat.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, I think property really is one of those points, isn't it?
Yeah.
Sticking point. But I'd say that actually a lot of the time we don't give that generation as much credit. Like, a lot of the time they understand that it is worse for us in general in terms of property than it was for them. They just don't have any real investment in changing that for this generation.
And I assume when you say changing that, you mean voting a certain way that would affect change
potentially, or say lobbying for affordable housing or lowering rents so that as a result the house prices would go down too.
Yeah
because let's be honest, a lot of that generation are landlords too, and they go by what the market value of the rent is in the area. If that suddenly dropped down, house prices naturally would too.
They never drop fast enough, do they? They always seem to drop. They do. But I mean, patterns are shown just in the last 12 years since the recession, when house prices in Britain at least have dropped. They have dropped, but they've dropped so slowly that by the time they've dropped to a level that people think, oh, that's getting a reasonable, suddenly the market's picked up again. The prices just start going up again. Depending on your area, of course.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, the time.
I mean, the thing.
Sorry.
No, go for it, Robin.
No, you go ahead.
Oh, okay. Thank you.
Yeah.
I mean, the thing is, like, I almost don't blame older generations for voting for their interests. And to be honest, I think this whole it feels like we're painting the boomers as baddies. But I can't say that if we were in their shoes, that we wouldn't do the same. Like. En masse, anyway, like our generation, I'm sure, would still vote for our interests. I mean, we're voting the opposite way in record historic numbers. In the most recent election, I think it's really shocking looking at the graph. Like, it basically is a complete opposite of what the actual figure was. So like 50 to 64 year olds voted. 65 plus year olds voted 64% for the Conservative Party,
right.
And 18 to 24 year olds voted 56% for Labour. Mm. So it's completely divided politically, but I don't blame the older generation for voting for their interests.
Well, there's an old saying, Alex, isn't there? It's I can't remember the exact age, but it's if you get to 60, I think it is, or if you're grey haired, and if you're if you're under 60 and you don't vote for a socialist type party, then you have no heart. And if you're over 60 and don't vote for a socialist party, you have no brain. Yeah. it's that kind of thing of voting for your own interests or what you believe at a certain ages. I mean, interesting stat for you guys is that as of July 2019, the millennial age bracket, which they've defined in this particular article as being ages 23 to 38, outnumbers the boomer generation in the US, ages 55 to 73. So we could see a little bit of a shift towards what political parties, who they're targeting.
Yeah.
We could see that maybe if we're talking about a younger generation being slightly more left-leaning, I mean, Trump seems to not want, as we said last week, doesn't seem to want to really go after those votes because then maybe they're not valuable. He knows that those people won't vote for him regardless of what he says. But it could be interesting to see in a few years' time when, you know, let's be honest, the boomer generation start to die off, whether that kind of shifts a little bit and they're trying to actually appeal to a broader spectrum. I'm not saying they're going to suddenly turn towards the left, but there might be some policies in there that help younger generations, that are aimed at younger generations, where maybe at the moment that isn't the focus.
Yeah, but I think you're right. That sounds about right. Yeah, that's fascinating.
I do think it will be a while, though. I mean, the thing is, we younger people may outnumber like the older generation, but they just don't vote. They just don't turn up.
Mm. True.
So I think that's still the case, I still think they're just gonna appeal to older people in politics mainly.
I wonder sometimes if that speaks to a truth contained within Aristotle's statement, which is younger people are overconfident and they're less experienced. So that's why they don't turn out to vote, because they don't see how politics is relevant to their lives.
Yeah.
But once they get a bit older, they start thinking, oh yeah, that influences everything I do.
Mm.
That has a huge impact on me. That's why the older generation votes. Yeah.
Mm. Yeah. Yeah.
It makes sense. I think the other thing to bear in mind is that when they created these policies, or a lot of them, especially things like the age of retirement, there were predictions and there were studies made about, of course, people will live longer, and they will have done mathematical models about what's affordable. But you go on. You're not necessarily thinking about 100 years' time, are you? 200 years' time. You're thinking about, okay, when our generation, people probably in their 30s and 40s, the policymakers, when we're older, what would suit us based on the information we have at the time. And so looking back now, you know, we could say it's naive to have given generations as much as they have. But the likelihood is that if we really thought about it, the generations under us will probably get even less.
Mm.
And the generations under that will probably get even less. So if we're being totally honest about it now, we could say to ourselves, okay, to preserve what we want for our future generations, we'll have to get less. But being people that are alive and well and living now, the likelihood is that we're not going to do that, are we? We're very much going to be, okay, what do we need to survive when we're older? And that, I think that's pretty much what the Boomer generation have done, for better or for worse, is what they've done. I think it's easy to make villains out of it. Whereas, as Alex said earlier, a lot of the time people are thinking about themselves and their own generation.
Well, I think that's the complicated issue, isn't it? Because on the one hand, it's absolutely understandable and it's absolutely okay to say these people didn't act with malice. They just acted as people act, which is with self-interest. Can't help it. We're creatures of habit. We've got these survival instincts. We want to look after ourselves and our families first. That's absolutely fine. But on the other hand, no, they've acted selfishly. they haven't thought about the consequences of the lifestyles that they were leading. And that's not entirely their fault. A lot of that is advertising. A lot of that is governments indulging them. We know this from the 1970s, the amount of opportunities that so many governments gave up to curtail fossil fuel consumption, to curtail the destruction of renewable energies by the fossil fuel industry. There's so much more could have been done, and people were blithely, blissfully unaware of what was going on, or the shenanigans.
Yeah, I mean, that's something that we haven't spoken about at length, but the environment as well. It's that generation, and we can't
say we're speaking
for you at all, this generation, because we are now in the late 20s. But in terms of the huge advancement in creating plastics out of crude oil is just one example, and pumping unprecedented amounts of oil out of the ground was that generation, right?
Yeah, absolutely.
A lot of the damage has been done within the last 50 years. Yes, population growth has exploded.
Yeah.
That's going to be, of course, with more people, it's going to be more resources are going to be used up. But the methods that have been used. There's really isn't anywhere to hide there, I don't think.
In terms of generational divide, though, and whether we are really like different to our parents and our grandparents in this regard, like I don't know, though, because I can't say that if our generation was in their shoes, that we wouldn't have done the same. We wouldn't have utilized plastics, and you could make the argument just looking at consumption nowadays. You know, millennials are still ordering stuff from Amazon, they're still getting the latest iPhone every year. Are we really any better? I'm not convinced that we are. I think it's human nature that we just look at our self-interests and what we want now. Maybe not us individually, because the three of us, we're perfect, obviously. But as a generation, I think that's my big takeaway. Is that maybe it's just reductive looking at this as generations. Maybe that's it, and maybe that's just become the buzzword for media to like hate on millennials and boomers. When actually we're all just people, man. We're all just people, and we're all people. Different.
I think that's such a good example, Alex, because that's another kind of a big cliche of the generational division, which is older people criticizing younger people for their wasteful habits, and younger people staring back at them and saying, wait a second, we were born into this world where everything was made of plastic and everything was disposable. Like, you created that world, you know, in the last 60 years. We didn't do anything.
Millennials didn't make Amazon. Blame Jeff Bezos.
Exactly, yeah. but what it amounts to is, it's the same problem, is that the baby boomer generation were born into a world that decided that's how they're going to do things. The fact that it developed over the course of their lifetimes and they were directly involved in creating that society that we now live in seems to fall by the wayside. But point is, both generations are equally guilty of being as lazy and as selfish as the other. It's just that the ways they do it are different. And we have this very clear post-World War II historical point that we can say that is when it started. And that's literally the only difference. Yes. That's the only reason to have any kind of generational difference, is to say that was baby boomer generation because the Second World War led to all these massive social changes and these economic changes. And then the internet gets created when the millennials get born, and you're like, and they're the generation who grew up with the internet.
Yeah.
And that's the only difference.
Generation X over here, just like, does anyone remember us? We exist.
Yeah, I mean, the divide between the even the generations are constructs, aren't they?
Yeah,
yeah.
I mean, there's so many intergenerational things, and also you get people who are much older who seem a lot younger than they are, right? Yeah. And vice versa. So it's difficult to say that socially, people are divided up into specific generations that are characterized by certain traits, be that what they like to spend their money on. Be that whether they're selfish or not, you know, I think it's almost impossible to divide people up just by that.
But yeah, that's so true. I've known millennials to complain about millennials not knowing that they were a millennial, because millennial has just become a buzzword for like young people, when actually they're like mid-30s now.
Yeah,
40. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
God.
It's true. We probably should have said what we were categorizing millennials by at the beginning.
I think I mentioned that millennials were defined as born in 1981.
Oh, did you?
Okay. Yeah. It was part of a study. We could be a bit more structured in these debates, but why be structured when you can just be freewheeling and loose? Come on, guys.
Very true.
But this is a complex one. But what do you guys listening at home or watching us on YouTube think? Please tell us either in the YouTube comments or by contacting us on Twitter at jinterestingyt.
That was it. That's the one.
Thank you very much.
Very good. Very good. And I'm at martinteresting.
Like that. And I'm at justalexing, which...
doesn't even make sense.
No, that was, we decided that on the Discord chat. I think it was Kat gave me the idea for that handle, so thanks Kat.
It's a good one. Like it. I'm gonna have to join you both. I'm still at All Time Robin. I'll change it eventually. Okay. You up for a quiz?
Cool
sounds good.
Okay, time for this week's quiz. As always, 10 questions, and if we need a tiebreaker, a bonus question. No exciting weird rounds like last week, Alex.
Yes, hey, crazy. It was good. It was an exciting
picture round that slightly annoyed me at the time, because I didn't know what was going on and didn't really know any of the paintings. But on reflection, it was a good round.
It was a good round.
Thank you. Thank you very much. I thought it'd be a bit different.
An underhanded compliment.
I was just trying something new. I had to compete with Robin's amazing coronavirus quiz the week before.
It was good. It was very good.
Thank you. This week, everything to play for. Alex is only one game, one victory behind Martin on the total score table. So
yeah, wow. You've had a good run, Alex.
See how this goes. So buzzers at the ready. Alex, what's yours?
I've gone for an old favourite.
It's always been celebrated for its excellence. There is a California champagne by Paul Masson.
It's good. Never when it's good, it's good.
Martin, what's your buzzer?
I've gone for a classic, for me. Aha! Alan Partridge's Aha.
Nice.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Okay then, with fingers on buzzers, question number one. Rope-a-dope is a term used in which sport? I heard aha, Martin.
Boxing.
Yes, correct. It is boxing.
Yeah, hooray. I wouldn't have got that one. Fair enough.
All right, then.
Fair play.
1-0 to Martin. Question number two.
What is the expression used for?
It's when you're dodging, I think. I think it's when you're like on the ropes and you're... I think Muhammad Ali did it and he dodged loads of punches in a row. Iconic.
I've seen that.
I think it's that.
Oh. Yeah, and you run rings around them. You make them think you're doing one thing and you do the other. Kind of,
yeah, of course, because I know loads about boxing.
Yeah, me too. Tons. I definitely included it in the quiz because I'm such an expert.
Boxing fan.
Question number two, then. A bit trickier, this one. What is the most popular manufactured drink in the world?
For its excellence.
Yeah.
There's a California champagne.
Most popular manufactured drink. Water.
No. Okay.
Is it?
Yeah, Martin?
Is it T?
It is T.
Damn it! That's such
that
a good
correct.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well done.
Yeah, that's
cool. A lot of people drink it.
Yeah, apparently tea is consumed. Sorry. The same amount of tea is consumed as coffee, hot chocolate, soft drinks, and alcohol combined.
No way.
Wow.
Yeah.
What?
That's mad.
Absolutely nuts. Yeah, crazy. Well, so, 2-0 to Martin. On to question number 3.
It's not a good start.
Multiple choice question here.
Oh, I love it.
Which of the following cities is the furthest south? Is it Toronto, Seattle, or Budapest?
Celebrated for its excellence. This is California.
I think that was Alex.
Okay.
Budapest.
Nope.
Oh,
is
no.
it? Is it? Oh.
Yes, Martin.
Is it Seattle?
Fingers on buzzers, because it is not Seattle.
What?
It can't be out of three. Doesn't make any sense.
Yes, Alex?
Is it Toronto, Robin?
It is Toronto. Oh. Well done. Well done.
I had a brief blip then when I kind of forgot what the third option was.
I was actually going to Toronto was the one I first thought of, and then I was like, is that too, does it seem too much of a red herring? I convinced myself out of saying it.
That's the trick.
Yeah.
So I probably shouldn't award that under normal circumstances, but I gave the point to Alex. So 2-1.
Yeah.
Why
question
not?
Number 4. interesting tidbit, by the way. This is amazing. Toronto is the furthest south out of those three, but half of Canada's population lives south of Milan.
Wow.
Really?
Yeah. How mad
That's
is
mad.
That? Yeah.
Yeah.
What?
Latitude and longitude, baby.
My geography seems really off at the moment. That just seems... I just imagine all of Canada in the north.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's north. It makes it cold, look like that. Snowy. Yeah. But no. Okay. Question number 4. Closest wins.
Okay.
How many ribs do we have normally?
No Mariner Mountains here.
I'm just kind of counting.
Mm. Yeah, you're allowed to count. Or?
I mean, you can do whatever you like. Anyway. Whoever buzzes first gets the first go. So, you know.
It's always been celebrated for its excellence.
Yes, Alex?
12.
I'm going to give Martin a chance.
Damn it, so it wasn't spot on. It's an odd number, Martin. Go for an odd number.
I think it's going to be also 12.
But you can't say
same. This is unprecedented. I mean, you're both equally close, I suppose.
What do we do in this? You can't have the same answer as me.
We never planned for this scenario, Ben.
Yeah, exactly. Breaking the system.
Oh, gosh. Democracy is collapsing.
What is it?
So we have a second.
Both another go, yeah.
Ready for its excellence. There's a California.
I'm going to go lower then and say 10.
Okay, Martin?
What if I say 10 again?
Then
stop it, Martin! You're ruining the game!
I'm going to go for higher. I'm going for 14.
14. Martin is closest.
Yeah.
What? How many ribs do we have?
Well, Alex, I think I know the mistake you made. We have 24. We have 24. Because we have 12 on each side.
What? Even that seems mental to me, to be honest.
I was counting. I was like, 1, 2,
oh,
4, 5, 6,
it's
7,
a,
8,
it's
9.
A cage.
Yeah, it's 12. Yeah.
Mm.
Yeah. Two sides.
Yeah.
I was thinking 12, but then it goes all the way around, but... Where does
it start? Well, you got your breastplate and you got your spine.
Good point.
That is the mistake.
I felt bad for you there because you said 12 and I was like,
I just imagined it as the front ones, you know.
I was thinking like, are there some hidden that I haven't been able to feel?
Well, that's 3-1 to Martin. Question number 5. On the periodic table, what is the chemical symbol for silver?
celebrated for its excellence.
Oh no, I'm afraid I got to give it to the chance to Alex.
I wouldn't worry, Martin, because I really don't know.
okay.
Is it, for some reason, I feel like, is it AG?
It is AG.
Yes!
Well done.
What, a shot in the
Argentum,
dark.
Or Argentum, from the Latin. is your buzzer working, Martin?
I kind of
Martin?
Had a feeling.
Sorry?
Is your buzzer working?
It slips in and out of working and not working, so I think it works.
Yeah, okay. Well,
it's just...
Yeah. We'll see how it goes.
It sometimes just buffers.
Oh, that's annoying. If you're willing to go into the next question, we can.
All good.
You sure you can carry on, Martin? Are you sure you don't want to forfeit? It's fine if you do. That's fine.
Well, by my count, it's 3-2 to Martin, so three Alex two. Is catching up. Question number six. Question six is transport and history combined. Okay. Which long-distance train had its first run in October 1883?
It's always been celebrated for its excellence.
Yes, Alex?
Long distance train. Is it the Orient Express?
It is the Orient Express.
Yeah! Oh, stupid thing.
You're blaming your buzzer again.
This time I pressed it and it just didn't do anything. It didn't even buffer. It just didn't do anything. I think it's my screen.
Did you?
Because it's cracked.
Oh, no.
Anyway.
I suppose you can't play it from your computer because your headphones are in, aren't they?
I tell you what, Martin, yeah. I'll allow it if you push the button and it doesn't work. If you just go, aha!
Yeah,
if you say, aha,
it's fine.
I'm using the other hand on the screen where the crack's across the left-hand side. I'm just going to use the other side.
Okay. But if you want to say, aha, that's absolutely fine as well.
Okay.
Okay, going into question seven, 3-all. In 1998... students Larry Page and Sergey Brin founded Martin.
Larry Page. That was Apple. No.
Celebrated for its excellence.
Yes, Alex.
Google.
Yes, it was Google.
Yeah,
it was Google. Shit. Apple was a bit earlier, I think, in the 70s.
Yeah, it was. Yeah. It's back in the year.
I only know that because Forrest Gump has shares in Apple.
Oh yeah, that's true. Yeah.
Alex has overtaken Martin. 4-3. Question number eight. This is a trickier one. Gonna really stretch your brains here. Who is the Roman god of agriculture?
Oh.
Always been celebrated for its excellence.
Yes, Alex?
Oh wait, I might be thinking of the Greek. Oh shit. I was going to say Persephone.
It's possible, but that's not the answer I'm looking for.
I have to say,
I don't know.
I wasn't sure of. I know she has something to do with like spring and life, but I don't know if agriculture was it.
Couldn't confirm that for you. Yeah. Martin, do you want to have a guess?
I'm Roman.
I genuinely don't know. I don't know.
Okay, well, I'll give you a clue. It's one of the planets.
Okay. Okay, there's one it's not. Could it be Neptune? No.
No.
It's Greek.
It is a California ship.
Yes, Alex.
Is it Mercury?
Nope.
Ah.
Okay, let's go through them then.
Neptune is god of the sea, I think, and Mercury is the messenger god.
Yeah, but I don't know. He might have a side hustle.
That's just true.
Could it be Uranus?
No.
Well, now that you've said that, I don't,
you got a blank.
It's been celebrated for its excellence.
Yes.
Venus.
No, that's love.
Yeah, I know. I know, but I mean, they were often gods of multiple things, right?
This is true.
What's left? Neptune?
You said Neptune. That was your first.
What's left?
I can't tell you.
Mars. Oh, Mars.
No, that's war.
No, it's the war.
For its excellence.
Yes, Alex.
Saturn.
It is Saturn.
I said Saturn. That wasn't that the first one I said?
No, you said Neptune.
I think I'd already said it.
No, you said Neptune.
I'm not even concentrating.
Right. Oh, that's a shame. That's a shame. It's all right. There's still definitely a chance for you to come back. This is 5-3 to Alex with two questions remaining. Martin, you can come back from this.
I've had a shocker here. Absolute shocker.
I'm sorry, Martin.
Okay. Fingers on buzzers. What nationality was author Joseph Conrad?
Oh, yeah, it's buffering. Cool.
Celebrated for its excellence. It is a California.
Alex, yeah.
I don't know, so I'm just going to go American.
Nope. Martin?
Canadian?
No. You're both in the right kind of sphere. Culturally, you're not far off.
Yeah. Okay.
Yes, Martin.
Australian.
No.
Has
been celebrated for its excellence.
Was Joseph Conrad Mexican?
No.
I thought it would be a bit of a trick. You said in the right sphere. So
yeah, I guess that's geographically that's the thing. I should have. Yeah.
Yeah,
that's not what I meant.
Not geographically. Oh, no. Okay. I mean, you mean English speaking?
Basically, yeah.
Conrad. Conrad sounds New Zealander, Kiwi.
Nope.
Has always been celebrated for its excellence.
Was he British?
He was British. He was indeed. Okay. He was actually Polish by birth, and didn't speak English until he was in his 20s. But he lived in Britain and wrote in English through his entire career. Even though English was his second language. However, he's sometimes referred to as British Polish, but that's a bit misleading because he was born in what is now Ukraine, but was part of the Polish Empire, except it had been conquered by Russia. So he wasn't really Polish. But he was British. He was a British citizen and wrote in English. So that is 6-3 to Alex. On
Martin, I'm sorry.
Final question. Question number 10. Because it's clapping me. At the time of recording this, it is Star Wars Day. May the 4th be with you. So I thought we'd have a Star Wars question to close. It's too early, Martin. It's too early.
I know.
Yeah, testing your buzzer. That's fine. Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, well, because it's Star Wars Day on May the 4th as we record this, I thought we'd have a Star Wars question to close. Who is the only actor to appear in every live-action Star Wars film?
Every single one?
Every single live-action film, yeah.
Well, I haven't seen the latest one.
Wait, no, it can't be him.
Well, have a guess and see.
No. I don't know. Like, he actually appears on screen?
Yeah.
What?
I've got something in mind.
Yeah, go for it.
But I don't know who the actor is.
Oh, okay.
So it probably isn't them, because that'd be too... might be a bit difficult, I don't know.
It might be worth waiting for that.
This is California.
Oh, yeah, Alex, yeah.
Well, yeah, actually, I don't know his name. Can I say the character's name?
You can say it.
Well, actually, Martin wanted to have a guess first, because...
no, you buzzed in, Alex.
We probably have the same...
Go ahead, Alex.
Okay, well, I was going to say C-3PO, the actor for C-3PO.
I mean, that is a character he's played, yeah.
Okay, so that's the character, but we need the actor.
Yeah.
What's his name? What is his... I don't know his name.
Is his name Peter something?
No.
Oh, I don't know where that came from then.
I'm not sure. Not sure, Robin.
His initials are AD.
AD.
Andrew. Alan. Andrew.
Alan. Alex.
No. No.
Alfred.
No.
Albert.
I don't know who he is.
Okay, well, Alex has won anyway, so I can afford to not give you a point. It's Anthony Daniels.
Oh,
okay. He played C-3PO, but I couldn't accept that answer because although he's in all but one of his appearances, he has played C-3PO in his appearance in Solo, a Star Wars story. He played a different character. He was still in the film, and he's still the only actor to appear in every single live action Star Wars movie. So, well done, Alex. Your victory. Well earned. Your third victory.
I know. They're snowballing now. I'm just suffering from success.
It's going to happen. That puts both of you, I think, on the same equal ranking now.
Really? Wow.
I think for next week, actually, I'm doing the quiz next week, but I'm going to have to just get an actual buzzer.
Yeah.
I think I'm out to buy the bullet because it happened 2 weeks in a row.
That's
now.
Pretty bad. Yeah.
I'm being a bad loser, definitely, 100%. But I'm okay with that. I'm fine with that.
Hey, Martin, I just want to say I thought you did. Under the circumstances, I thought you did really well, and you should be commendable.
Your patience
I'd like
was
to I'd like to dedicate my victory to you, Martin.
Well, it's incredibly kind. Very kind. Yeah.
Would you like the bonus question, or shall I save that for next time?
Oh, no.
To be quite honest, I don't really care.
I'd like the bonus question.
I'm saying this in jest.
Okay.
We'd love
it. It's nice and simple. What is the world's largest land mammal?
My buzzer's, of course, buffering.
Yeah, but
largest
go ahead.
Land mammal.
Martin, yeah.
I thought it was an elephant.
It is an elephant.
Or an African elephant.
I was going to buzz and say a whale, and then I missed the part of the
land mammal. Yes.
I was like, oh, the trick is that it's a fish. It's always not a fish. But then, you said land mammal.
I suppose if you said beached blue whale, then you might have had something. But
technically
no.
Correct.
Yeah.
Or maybe I should have put that in the main body. That would have helped you, Martin. Who knows?
It's a land mammal very briefly.
Well, thank you for the quiz. Well done on your victory, Alex. Things are hotting up. And...
Do you say thank you for the quiz?
Thank you for taking part in the quiz.
Oh, yeah. Sorry.
That's what I meant. Maybe I said it wrong. What I meant was thank you for being in the quiz.
You just started talking in third person. You've got multiple personalities. Thank you, Robin.
Thank you, Robin.
You're welcome, Robin.
My microchip is malfunctioning. But more importantly, thank you all at home for listening and for keeping this channel going. And for our Patreon supporters in particular, big thank you. Head on over to the Patreon page now to listen to our exclusive Patreon podcast, which will be about Japan's UFO protocols.
Ooh.
Brand new. And we'll see all of you next time.
Bye-bye.
If you're a custodial supervisor at a local high school, you know that cleanliness is key. And that the best place to get cleaning supplies is from Grainger. Grainger helps you stay fully stocked on the products you trust, from paper towels and disinfectants to floor scrubbers. Plus, you can rely on Grainger for easy reordering, so you never run out of what you need. Call 1-800-GRAINGER, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.